been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.
Welcome, everybody. You are listening to the Seattle Shrimp Tank, coming to you live every other week on Tuesdays. We're at 1 p.m. today. We've moved up our schedule a little bit, but we're coming from the Cornerstone Financial Strategy Studios. I'm Brad Berger, co-hosting with Dan Whedon, and you can always catch a replay of the podcast at seattle.shrimptankpodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes so you'll never miss an episode.
Hey, Brad. You know, I'm really excited to bring up a topic with you. I bet you can't tell by just the way
Your enthusiasm is infectious.
I've got Richard Sherman enthusiasm and passion, and here's why. As you know, I'm a big Seahawks fan, so of course I was watching the game against Atlanta this past Sunday. And in the third quarter of that game, Richard Sherman appeared to get beaten by Julio Jones for an easy touchdown. And on the sideline, Richard Sherman lost his mind. He just had this huge meltdown. He was yelling at coaches, yelling at teammates, throwing helmets. It was an outburst you couldn't believe. What really caught my attention, though, was shortly into that, his defensive teammates, led by some of the other leaders, started rallying around him, encircled him, and started doing their little jumping thing where they say, "Who's got my back? I got your back." And they're doing this. Sherman still wasn't buying it until Earl Thomas actually physically grabbed him and brought him back into the team. Now, Pete Carroll, the head coach, wasn't involved in any of that. And in fact, if you look later at some of the video, he started to kind of go over there, saw they had it under control, and walked back. Now, I think this is a commentary on a business model. Pete Carroll allowed his leadership, his team, to take over. Now, the old school of command and control, we've seen it with football teams going way back. In fact, some still do, this old militaristic command and control, yell and discipline. But the Carroll model is to create a culture, to actually embrace individuality within the organizational system and allow leaders the autonomy to lead. Now, the result for about the last 5 or 6 years and on Sunday was a win for the Seahawks. I think that same model has the same results, has wins for business.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Dan. I hearken back to my early days in the military and how important it was to, for me at least, to have two incredibly diverse leadership styles in the first two battalion commanders that I had. And for many of you know that I served in Berlin just prior to the fall of the Berlin Wall. So it was an interesting time to be there. The first leader that I had was what I would consider to be this old school authoritarian style. I am the commander. You are a subordinate, no matter whether you're commissioned officer or not. You know, it's pretty much my way or the highway. Contrast that with the second. By the way, I actually did not do very well under that sort of leadership style. And contrast it with my second battalion commander, who I absolutely thrived under, had a very consultative style of leadership. And what was really interesting about that was that culture that he created, because the staff meetings that I would go to as a young officer between these two battalion commanders were significantly different. Again, the one was authority, my way of the highway, primarily. He was in transmit mode. We were in receive mode versus the other style, which was very collaborative in nature, where behind closed doors, whether you were the newest lieutenant to the unit or the commander's executive officer, he wanted to know what you really thought. And it was a safe environment in which you could have conversations without any sort of recourse. The bottom line was he took all the input. At the end of the meeting, a decision was made. And the only rule was once he made the decision, he was the commander. And then we were going to accept that as what was to be done. So from that particular standpoint, I think that's largely what Pete, you know, has created. I agree. This culture that basically says I trust those individuals on my team, and I trust the individuals to self-manage and self-police some of that. So I think that's a great observation and something that a lot of business leaders really should take to heart.
And I'm sure we're going to talk more about it, but I think you're going to introduce our guest right now, aren't you?
I sure am. So we have the pleasure of having as our guest today, Jim Chimperly. Jim is the owner of Pacific Machine. What I always find intriguing about certain businesses is their longevity. There are not a lot of businesses in our country, especially small businesses, that have the ability to survive more than a century and through various succession plans. And I've had the privilege of getting to know Jim through some professional affiliations and some work that we've done together in helping him with the next phase of his business and the succession plan. So we're happy to have Jim with us today.
And welcome, Jim. I know you're going to say hello there. I have a few more things just to quickly say about you and then a question. Now, Jim is the owner of Pacific Machine Shop. And as Brad mentioned, it's been over 100 years, 1912. Jim became the fourth owner, October of 1985. And so it was well established before he came in. At the time of the purchase, the business was located in Tacoma and had three employees. We'll find out how many more he has now. In 1988, they relocated to a larger space, and today they occupy a 20,000 square foot facility. Jim, we want to find out a lot more about you. First of all, welcome.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate being here and appreciate the invitation and just share my story.
So I have the first question for you, and it kind of comes along that line. For you, what's the significance of having a 100-plus-year-old business?
I think part of it is the continuation of a lot of hard work by some people who came before me, but also there's a bit of ownership that goes along with that, and part of my duty as a present owner is to do what I can do to educate my employees and to see that business keep growing, maybe even possibly 200 years. It's hard to say, but that is the heritage of that business I inherited when I bought it.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about the heritage, Jim? You know, how did it begin? Where are you kind of in that lineage? What number are you? And if you can expand a little further on that, I'd be interested to know how you have seen the company evolve from owner to owner.
Obviously, I wasn't around in the beginning, but the person I bought it from, a gentleman named Daryl Franson, who I do have lunch with periodically, and 32 years ago when I bought it from him, one of his words of wisdom was, Jim, he said, you can survive on enough crumbs rather than the whole loaf. And I've been trying to figure out for years and years what that really meant to me, but the reality of it is that you have a lot of customers, and instead of one big one, you're going to be able to spread out any kind of the things that happen to small businesses. So Mr. Franson was a partner with two other gentlemen, and this business was located down on what was called the Theophos Waterway in Tacoma. And in our office, we have pictures from 1912 with the Model T sitting out there. And the building actually was tore down and moved and tore down and moved. And I guess they did a lot of that back in those days. So when I purchased a building in 1985, I was one of those guys. I was buying myself a job. I had been in the metal business my whole life. And so I just saw this as a real opportunity to do what I wanted to do with a building, a business. And so that was the start of that.
I was just going to say, for the sake of our guests, our studio is located at Cornerstone Financial Strategies, is just above the Theophos Waterway. So for those of our guests who have never been to this part of the country, and I'd invite you to get on Google Earth and just see how beautiful it is, and exactly what Jim is talking about. It's an amazing waterway structure that feeds into the Port of Tacoma.
Jim, in your bio, I just mentioned that when you purchased the business, 1,600 square foot building, three employees. Today, you're 20,000 plus. How many employees?
We have 15.
15 employees. What kind of transitions took place over the course of these 30 plus years? And how would you describe when you knew it was ready to make a kind of take a next step in the evolution?
I think what everybody needs a vision, at least if you're going to be in business, and a goal. And I believe I was pretty goal-oriented, because when I first bought the building, the business, I didn't buy the building, excuse me, my goal was, well, this looks like the size of a three-car garage. I want to make this look like a real business. And so after 2.5 years of that location, we did move and to a 5,000 square foot building, and it had a big sign out in front, and it looked like a real business. And so what happened is over time, and I would like to think it has to do with our customer first attitude and good service and do the job right and keep everything in front of you as far as being honest about what we're capable of doing and not telling our customers stories that were not quite true. So we continued to grow in the facility we were at, and we kept adding space and adding space as we kept adding equipment and employees. And so what's happened to us is that we, over the last few years, we just kept growing. And then in 2006, I joined an organization called the Center for Advanced Manufacturing. And it's based up in the Kent Valley. It's a nonprofit organization, and the acronym for that is CAMPS. And the CAMPS organization was a huge benefit to me because as I sat at my desk one day and was reading, I'm going, you know what? I'm in Tacoma, and the rest of the world is north of here. I think it's called Seattle. And so I decided that I needed to find out what was going on in the rest of the world, because when they first bought Pacific Machine in 1985, there was tons and tons of industry in the Tacoma Flytad area. Excuse me. And so that business had all pretty well disappeared with the advent of shipping containers into the port. So my thought was, if I'm going to survive and move forward, I need to collaborate with other people.
So I have a question about Pacific Machine. You know, one of the things that we're clearly aware of is technology has changed vastly over the last 100 plus years. What about Pacific Machine's core competency? What did they produce in 1912, and how does that differ from what they purchased in what they produced in 1985 to where it is today? Is it the same thing, just easier and better to do, or have you evolved in that manner as well?
I think it's really the same thing. It's about servicing manufacturers in the Puget Sound area, because that's pretty much what we do. We don't have a product of our own, and so the technology has obviously changed. I think that the machining industry was really at the forefront of really pushing computers into industry, because the software and the computers and the computer programming that we use today is just the best you can do, and you have to stay on top of that. And so I think other maybe businesses that are like mine that are no longer with us maybe didn't make that transition, but we did. And so not only is that in hardware, software, but it's also in personnel. And so we're always training our personnel and trying to look ahead to what's coming next. And so we're trying to stay on the forefront of things, because way back in the day when computerized machines first started, if you were making thousands of parts, that was the kind of piece of equipment you would purchase. If you're only making one and two, we'd use what we call manual machining, to crank the handles, turn the knobs, that sort of thing. Well, due to software development, that has all changed. And now we do one and two parts on a CNC machine.
So really staying on the cutting edge of technology, and I've got to believe in your business, the last 10, 12 years has really seen an increase in that. That's got to be critical for you.
It really is. And I think that that's where our goal is to continue. You know, one of the things that's out there now that everybody wants to talk about is 3D printing. Mm-hmm. And that will be a part of the piece of equipment of our puzzle that we'll look into in the future. It's not quite where it needs to be for our type of business, but it's coming. And we're looking at it all the time. I think one of the things, we get a lot of publications and to see what's going on in the rest of the world. And here again, my association with the Center for Advanced Manufacturing, Puget Sound, has been a huge boost to us. And so even when we first started in that organization, the concept was we were trying to find future employees. And so then the business world came to a halt in 2007, 2008. And then it was more like, how are we going to save the employees that we currently have?
Well, Jim, we're going to take a break to hear from our sponsors. And when we come back with our guest, Jim Chimperley, for our hot or not section of the show, we're going to find out from Jim if he really cares about giving away all of his money. Find out when we come back. and this is the Shrimp Tank.
The Seattle-based Shrimp Tank is brought to you in part by Cornerstone Financial Strategies. Financial planning is a lot like owning a sports team. If there's no one coordinating the team members, each will do what they do best individually, but lose as a team. Why? No one knows what the other's game plan is. At Cornerstone Financial Strategies, we understand that people try to hire the best professionals, attorney, CPA, financial advisor, etc., each for their specific expertise, but often fail to have them communicate as one team with the same goal, your desires and values. This is why at Cornerstone Financial Strategies, we offer values-based, comprehensive financial planning. And since money is not the most important thing in life, we ensure your custom-catered, personalized solution will take into consideration your most important goals aligned with your most deeply held values. For more information, visit us on the web at www.liveyouridealife.com. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC, financial planning and investment advice offered through Financial Advocates Investment Management, a registered investment advisor, DBA Cornerstone Financial Strategies, LLC, and is a separate entity from LPL Financial.
Well, thank you very much, Amber. For those of you who don't know, Amber's our executive producer here, and she keeps us all on task and going on. So we want to welcome back everybody to the Shrimp Tank, where we interview young entrepreneurs along with some of the brightest and best CEOs and business owners in the Seattle area. I'm Brad Berger, along with my esteemed co-host, Dan Whedon. And you can always catch a replay of the podcast at seattle.shrimptankpodcast.com. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. And for our next segment, I'm going to turn it over to Dan. I think he's going to ask that first intriguing question of Jim.
Well, Jim, this is how we play the game Hot or Not. Brad and I will give you a business topic or maybe even a non-business topic. And you're going to tell us if you think it's hot or not, and then a few words as to why. So, Jim, hot or not, profit sharing for employees, giving your money away, is it hot or not?
That's a hot topic, and we do that really well, I think. It's very important because I want my employees to be feeling like they're part of ownership, which they are, and the business is not successful without them.
Yeah, and I think that we might know the answer to this based upon our prior conversation as well as hearing a little bit from Jim, but here's one for you, Jim. Hot or not, collaborative style of leadership.
Very much so. We have a management team that consists of our office manager, Robin. Amber kind of reminds me of her. She's got red hair also. So there's nothing wrong with having a redhead around to run things. So Robin is really the hub of the wheels, and the spokes are hooked to her. And so our designer is part of that team. Our shop foreman is part of that team, and our shop coordinator is part of that team. We meet three times a week, 6:30 in the morning, and we talk about stuff. And so when the phone rings, it isn't for Jim. It's for somebody else on that team.
Jim, hot or not, online learning.
Very important. Everything we need to know, at least in my industry, is online. And if you want to learn something new, it's there. Spend a lot of time looking at a computer screen.
Well, I've got some internal motivations for asking this question, and maybe we'll get into this a little bit deeper because it's an area I love to study. But hot or not, vocational degrees post high school.
Very, very important. And from my perspective, I'm very involved in this in a lot of different ways. But as I mentioned earlier, the CAMPS organization, I'm chairman of the Workforce Development Program. And so we work really hard. We try to grab kids in high school, bring them in, have them do really nasty jobs like sweep the floor and paint equipment, things like that. And if they're still around when they graduate that June, then we ask them if they want to work 40 hours a week. They say yes. Then we put them to work. When September rolls around, we ask them another question. You think you want to learn how to do this for your life? And they go, yes. And we go, okay, so now you're going to be in a four-year apprenticeship program. And so our goal, because of the model that we use for business, is based on long-term employment.
I have another hot or not here for you. I'm going to see if I can ever get you to a not. So that's going to be my personal goal. Jim, hot or not, personal relationships with employees, or is it business only?
That's a really, really good question. It's a really fine line to walk. But being a really small organization, I am personally involved with some of my employees. Let me rephrase that, with part of my employees' life. And that is some of the things we do to cement our relationship is that we actually make personal loans to employees. We bail them out at times if there's a maybe a personal problem that requires a little treatment someplace, we do that. It's very, very important to me to do those kinds of things to bind the company together.
Can I do a quick follow-up on that just really briefly?
You bet.
You know, I think you're dead on when you say it's a fine line. There's this balancing act there. And as we talked about the collaborative and the whole Pete Carroll thing and everybody playing for each other, so to speak, is that something that entrepreneurs who are listening to you right now in our podcast, and hopefully there's millions of them, but if they're listening now, is that something that you develop over time? How's the best way to internalize that?
One of the things I attempted to do really on it when I owned this business is to be honest with people at all times. And I'm not the kind of a person that's going to hide behind a post and watch my employees, make sure they're working all the time they're there, just exactly what they're doing. So it requires a high level of honesty. And so that was my goal. And to do that, I have to trust that those people are doing what they're supposed to be doing when they're supposed to be doing it. And by and large, after 32 years, I fired one person who wasn't doing what he was supposed to be doing. And that was after a lot of counseling and everything else. So that fine line is, do I invite these my employees to my house on personal birthdays or things like that? The answer to that is no. But I just feel very strongly that this is a relationship, and it's a relationship based on trust. And I have to trust, and they have to trust. And so that's built over a period of time by doing what you say you're going to do when you say you're going
to
do it.
So, Jim, I want to combine two things that you said into basically one question, partly because I think it's appropriate to let entrepreneurs know about something I think you said was incredibly important, as well as I'd like to know a little bit about the future. You mentioned vision, and you started talking about specific goals you had. And I'd like you to expand a little bit more on your vision for Pacific Machine going forward. The second part of that is, and it may or may not be related, but the very first time that I saw a 3D printer was at the Microsoft store in the mall, where they were demonstrating what it could do. And of course, what it was creating for, I don't know, $3,000 was small widgets that you could make and carry around the house, and it looked like a neat, cool toy. Then I had the opportunity to go to SEMA in Las Vegas and watch them actually 3D print a car. And one of the things that I was interested about is the material they were using was largely some sort of plastic or plastic type material. I know that you probably, and please correct me if I'm wrong, deal in a lot of metal type working. And how do you see 3D printing being impacted by materials going forward?
That's that's a great question, Brad. And when I look at 3D printing and I look at the car, because it was pretty cool. and there were some other guys that did the car. I don't know if we're talking about the same Cobra.
We may have been there at the same time.
But for a company like us, we do a lot of one-off sort of things, but we also do a lot of design work. And can I plug one of my...
Absolutely.
Okay.
Please.
Well, one of our customers, it's kind of an interesting story because it's one of those things you never really quit. And it talks about also how we treat everybody. And so when I first bought Pacific Machine Shop, one of my customers was a company called Brown & Haley, who are pretty well world famous for almond roca. And so
it's a great Tacoma-based firm, we'll say. Another one of those ones with a long tradition.
That's correct. And so what happened over a period of time is the guy who was the plant manager, his brother-in-law owned a machine shop. And so we lost that business, not because we were not doing the job correctly, but that was sometimes things happen like that. So we're talking 30 years ago, and just this year, Brown & Haley came back to us. And what happened was they had hired a mechanic who worked for another company who was a customer of ours and still is. And that mechanic said, hey, why don't you try these guys, meaning why don't you try Pacific Machine? So now we're in the process of designing and manufacturing some equipment for those people. So that is just kind of how the whole thing works. Now, would we use 3D printing in that process? No. It's the part is too big, it's too complicated, and it has multiple functioning parts. that would include things like pneumatic air cylinders and things like that. So those things can't be 3D printed, but other parts can be. And will we get there? Absolutely. That is correct. We will be there someday.
Because I assume there's some parts internally to what you make and manufacture for individuals could withstand not having to be solely made out of metal.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
So now this has got me thinking. I love the whole 3D, thing, but it's probably going to be our last hot or not. Strategic visioning for CEOs, presidents of small businesses, as far as looking forward and trying to look into that crystal ball, is that hot or not?
That's a hot subject all the time, at least for me, because I'm always looking forward. There's a little saying on my desk, you know, some people are told what to do. Some people stand around, look what to do, and other people figure out what to do. And so that is always looking forward. Because, and especially, and we talked about this earlier, the technology in the field I'm in is constantly changing all the time. And so, and we talked about the 3D printing thing. So, and so what we try to do is we try to anticipate what's going to happen next. And we try to anticipate how we can better serve the customers we already have. And so when we look at that, it's always forward looking, always forward looking.
So I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brad.
Well, I was going to ask you, Jim, as you look at the next 10 years, even though you may be in the process of looking for a succession plan for Pacific Machine Shop, I know that you're obviously very in tune with what happens to the future and what it means to your employees. What is your vision for Pacific Machine 10 years from now?
I would believe that part of my dilemma, I guess, when I look at succession is that how do I do this? Because I have this group of people who have been extremely loyal. We talk about how I talked about how we hire for the long haul. And most of my employees have been there over 10 years. And so that creates a problem because they all get a lot of vacation time. But I want them all to still be there in 10 years because they're a lot younger than I am. So that would be that. And to grow. I mean, we have to keep growing, and we have been growing since day one. But yes, there's room for growth. There's always room for growth, and there's room for expansion. And so we have to figure out where that expansion is going to be.
To follow up on that, because it's an excellent question, and it's one in my working with small business owners that comes up constantly, part of that strategic visioning then should also be identifying how am I going to exit here? Is it going to be from somebody internally, an employee who's already here? Is it from a competitor or a peer somewhere else? Is that part of what you're starting to look at now, or have you been looking at it? And what would you give as guidance to those listening to us who may not have started?
You know, it's interesting because of some health issues with my wife, it kind of escalated that thought process for me. And so, you know, I talked to different people about it, business brokers and Brad, and we go, okay, so how does that happen? And I'm still kind of in a quandary about how that happens because, like I spoke earlier, the employees I have, I like going to work, and I like hearing the stories they have to share. And you become involved in their lives, and that goes back to, you know, that line about how involved do you get with your employees. So when I look at that whole scenario, I'm going, okay, how do I do this? And my biggest wish would be to find somebody in my organization who can do that. The problem, I think, for most people in my situation is to find that right person. And to be a business owner and have been an employee is something else. And the reason I say that is because when I was 18 or 19 years old and I was going to school and I was working, and I was going, you know what, I work swing shift, I go to school during the day, and I know that I'm smart enough to run a company than these guys are. Of course, I was 19 years old. When you're 19, you think you know everything there is to know about everything. But that was always been my goal, was to own my own business. And I think wherever that person is who wants to own their own business is a person who should be in a succession situation for me.
Well, thanks, Jim. Yeah, we're going to take a short break to hear from our sponsors. And when we come back with Jim Chimperley for our Plead the Fifth section of the show, we're going to find out exactly what Jim thinks about zombies. Don't walk away. We'll be right back with more of Seattle Shrimp Tank.
The Seattle Shrimp Tank is brought to you in part by Toro Consulting Incorporated. Dan Whedon helps small and medium-sized business owners and entrepreneurs to grow, protect, and transfer the wealth of their business to create a better life for themselves. In nearly 30 years, he's worked with well over 300 businesses in all industries around the country to exponentially improve results around revenue generation, executive development, and resiliency that assure ongoing and sustainable operations. Dan is one of a select few consultants in the world honored as a member of the Million Dollar Consulting Hall of Fame. He got there because he has helped improve the condition of so many entrepreneurs and their companies. If you'd like to know how he could do the same for you, call him. You'll be glad you did. Dan can be reached at 360-271-1592 and dan@danweedon.com.
Welcome back to the Shrimp Tank, where we interview young entrepreneurs along with some of the brightest and best CEOs and business owners in the Seattle area. I am Brad Berger, along with my esteemed co-host Dan Whedon, and you can always catch a replay of the podcast at seattle.shrimptankpodcast.com, and don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. For our next segment, which is Plead the Fifth, as somebody who makes things, the question that I have for you, Jim, is what is the most unusual or the weirdest thing that you've ever manufactured?
Oh, my goodness. We have a what we call Grandpa's Bar Stool. And so one of the things we do is we try to accommodate everybody. And so we have this phrase called Grandpa's Bar Stool, which really started many, many years ago when some grandpa came in and said, hey, can you fix my bar stool? And we said yes. So we get crazy, crazy things that people have asked us to do. And so, you know, we've made light fixtures, which totally is unreal. One of our customers, a customer here in Tacoma called Bratkin Atlas Foundry, asked us to make a key for a certain lock that they could not find. And we looked at this key and we said, oh my God, you know, a key should not be this expensive. But we made this key and we told them it was going to be very expensive. And so it was thousands of dollars because it was a very intricate key. And I don't even know if they ever used it. But that's about the weirdest thing we've ever done.
How big was the key?
The key was only about 6 inches long, but it was fine-tuned, and some blacksmith way back in the early days of Atlas Foundry probably made one, and it probably worked. But when you're given junk and you have to make something really nice out of it, it's very difficult.
So I assume, first of all, it wasn't the key to the city or something important like that. And I'll tell you what, while it wasn't thousands of dollars, the last time I got a key cut, which was not at one of these automated machines at Lowe's or Home Depot, but I actually needed to go to a locksmith to have it done, I was surprised at how much a key was to have cut, especially if it's a specialized one. Yeah.
All right, Jim, you can plead the fifth on this. And this is you can either answer it, or if you don't want to answer it, you say you're pleading the fifth. Who would you rather get into a fight with? A giant, a zombie, or a Sharknado?
What's a Sharknado?
Okay, so cult movies is probably not. Sharknados are these sharks that are inside of tornadoes. So the tornado comes and the sharks come out of the tornado at you. So you can either fight a Sharknado in a tornado, you can fight a zombie, or you can fight a giant. Which one?
Well, we have a guy who is a big Samoan who works for us. I'd take the giant.
Oh, okay.
Very good. So, what is your favorite place to unwind and recharge?
Let me just hang on a second because it's pretty favorite. We have a cabin on a lake that's been in our family for, I think, 4 generations now. And it's up in the Olympic National Park.
I see a recurring theme here. Business and personal life.
And so, yes, it's like Crescent. It's up in Olympic National Park. It's been there forever and ever, and that is the place to unwind.
Okay, I've got a real good plead the fifth for you here because I have my own, and so I want to hear yours first. Plead the fifth, Jim. Who's your celebrity crush?
Ooh, who's be Adele?
Ooh, that's really good. See, mine. I'll tell you now. Mine is Sofia Vergara. So she would be my celebrity crush. But I think if Adele was singing to me, that could change my mind.
So we're not going back to the Farrah Fawcett poster that we probably all had.
I did have the Farrah Fawcett poster. I will. Yeah. I think we just all dated ourselves.
Well, that's not a gigantic mystery. Well, good. I was interested in asking this question a little bit earlier, Jim, because I think one of the things that people will come to discover if they listen to our podcast, ultimately, both Dan's style and my style and what we do in our professional lives, as well as interviewing fantastic business owners, is a little bit of what we do. What really resonates with me, obviously, is the recharging and finding a respite place, because living your ideal life is what we're all about. And we think that that's incredibly important as a balance for that. So let's talk a little bit about work-life balance. How do you integrate that into your day-to-day living?
Probably not very well if you ask my wife. One of the things that's really I would advise people who are thinking about being in business for themselves is that it becomes a lifestyle. And if you don't want to be in that lifestyle, if you don't want your whole life occupied by your business, then you need to be an employee, because that's been my experience. And maybe more so than a lot of people, but if you're starting where I started and you're building a business over a number of years that's taken to get to where I am now, it is a lifestyle. And especially part of what we did is, you know, we did 24/7 service. So there was times I was getting phone calls in the middle of the night and I was getting out of bed and going taking care of customers. And that's all part of the beginning of those kind of businesses. And now we're called a mature business. And so somebody else has to do that once in a while. But I think that family is absolutely huge. And you can't count it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think that's incredibly important, is make sure that you've got those priorities. And, you know, it's one of those things where I've watched other entrepreneurs. Now, Dan, you and I are both self-employed. We run our own businesses. And the one thing that I think is incredibly important, which is a key that you said, Jim, is I think it's important for any entrepreneur who gets into a particular line of entrepreneurship, self-employment, running their own business, to understand what the specific demands will be. I also think that there's a possibility, and you may want to comment on this a little bit, Dan, on whether or not you think that an entrepreneur can also, even within an established industry, shape how that's done. Because I think that that's something that we've done. It's one of the things I think my wife appreciates about what I do. And it may be simply because of the industry I'm in. I'm famous for saying there's no such thing as a financial planning emergency. So there's really no reason that I need to be here at 6:30 in the morning, or candidly 6:30 at night, or on any weekend. And the reason I say that is because there are certain businesses that I would never touch. Why? Because I have family members in them, particularly the restaurant business, because that is a business that has, you know, a lot of moving parts to it. And long working hours. Dan, any comments on that?
I agree with you. You know, entrepreneurship, I think we're all a little bit, the ones who are, there's a little bit of a crazy gene, I think, in us somewhere. However, I think that crazy gene manifests itself in giving us the ability, because we want so badly to create an organization, whether it's one person, 15 people, or 100 people, that transcends us, that helps build a legacy. And it's not just about us, but it's about our family. It's about the people that we serve, and that we have a vision. I think vision is a large part of this. And it And it kind of goes into what my next question for you is then, you know, this is my commentary. I believe that being an entrepreneur is actually less risky than being an employee. And so I'd like to hear your comments on my statement.
I would really totally agree. I'd much rather be in charge of my own destiny than giving that to somebody else to do. And that's one of the reasons that I own my own business. And so, you know, that balance, and you know, how do you get that? You know, I can talk about that a little bit more now, but I compartmentalize it. You know, I have this work thing, and when I go home, I have family. And yes, I may wake up and think about things in the middle of the night that take place at work, but I really compartmentalize those things and I keep them separate. Do I talk about a lot about what goes on at work at home? Not really. I really don't really stay away from that. Because we have lots of things going on in our family that are fun things to talk about, and grandchildren activities to go see. And so that's a whole different world, and it's fun to be around. And I think one of the most important things I've learned over time is to learn to laugh and have a good time.
That's excellent advice, Jim. And I want to share with you, of the 26 years that I have been self-employed, so not counting my military time, only 9 months of those was I ever an actual employee, and that wasn't by choice. It was a corporate change, and I made one conclusion out of that. I'm a really bad employee, a much better entrepreneur. So, Jim, we wanted to thank you so much for coming on the program today. And for folks that want to get in touch with you or learn more about your company, how can they get more information?
We have a website, and it's Pacific Machine, Inc., and they can type in Pacific Machine, Inc., and they'll hit our website. That's one way to reach us. And we also have, believe it or not, a phone number. It's 253-383-3838. And they can also just straight email me. It'd be jim@pacmacinc.com. I'd love to talk to anybody.
Excellent. So thanks so much, Jim. We are very excited to talk about our next show, because we know everybody's calendar will be absolutely clear. There'll be nothing going on this day. It is Tuesday, November 8th. Anything going on that day?
I think I'm picking up my dry cleaning.
Okay, fair enough.
Is that before
or after the show?
Before the show. I want to look good for the show. Okay,
very good.
Yeah, I want to look good for the show.
So our next show is going to be on Tuesday, November 8th. Of course, that's Election Day. We will be having here our guest, the CEO, Mark Lundy, of Cuz D Saw. I will share with you that I'm excited with all of our guests. Mark is representing an inventor who has created the first innovative redesign of the circular saw in almost 80 years. It's an amazing story. We're going to be looking forward to having him on there. Make sure you check out, and that will be back at our regular show time of 4 p.m., we want to make sure that you check out all of the replays on seattle.shrimptankpodcast.com. And remember, to become a shark, we all start out as shrimps. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. Welcome to the shrimp tank. Doing big things, chasing big dreams. Yeah, it's all real, this life's all that it seems. All the chicks scream, all the dudes yell. This just what I do, and I do it well. With the flow fresher than the new shoe smell. Going through hell, but homie, keep going. You know the saying, you gon' reap what you sow in. So I don't chase girls, I just chase dreams. Play the same game, but we ain't in the same league. Running a campaign, roadie 2016. Like a phone to die, putting me in charge. I'm a general from the front, I'm a lead the charge. Like a federal, fell on my lap, never. Going hard as ever, the results match the effort. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win.